Welcome back, or welcome to the ABCs of Disability Planning. My name is Eric Jorgensen. I'm the founder of Special Needs Navigator and your host. Today I'm talking to the founder of Able Transition Consulting, Kenzie Clark. Kenzie taught in the public school systems and started Able Transition Consulting to collaborate with and serve families. They support families ensuring successful post-school outcomes through peace of mind and building unique and comprehensive person-centered plans. The person-centered plan is kind of a buzzword in disability space lately. I know in Maryland and several other states, in order to receive services, you have to complete a person-centered plan, have to update it every year, but it just seems like a lot of checks in the box. I like Kenzie and I invited her to come on this podcast because Able Transition Consulting does so much more than check in the box. They do have a person-centered plan that is a visual map, and then they do a deeper dive into what they call the extensive lifelong transition plan, exploring every area of adulthood. And they really focus on creating autonomy and independence and self-determination as much as possible. I understand some of you, your children are varying levels of capability, but I think this is really for anybody. The schools will help you start transitioning, typically between the ages of 14 to 16, but you are driving that bus. Don't let a school transition coordinator tell you what your child can or can't do or should or shouldn't do. You know your child better than anybody else, and it's really up to you to advocate for your child. Think about it. The transition coordinators of these schools will oftentimes have 50, 100, maybe more students that they're trying to serve. It's really hard to get individualized with that many students in a short period of time where they might interact with you and your child once or twice a year. Kenzie's program is a four-month program, and it's really, really intensive to do a deep dive into what you guys want with your child and what your child wants. And I encourage you to hit subscribe, leave your comments for me. I will listen to all of them. And if you want to contact Kenzie, her information is in the show notes. Let's listen in. Kenzie, really glad you're able to join me today. I have so many questions and I can't wait to get started. But before I dive into the things that I want to cover, what's on your mind? What would you like to start this interview off with or the discussion off with? What would you want to make sure you just get out there?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Well, I've had a lot of client sessions today. So I think just coming into this call from meeting with clients, I think something I would definitely want to just put out there for families and individuals who are listening is that you don't have to do this alone. And you've got to take care of yourself first and foremost. Specialists and individuals out there who are ready and willing to help you, but it is tricky and hard to find those people. And when you start thinking about the future, it can be overwhelming. It can be and is emotional, but you don't have to go at it alone. And that's a big part. That's a big role that we play at Able Transition Consulting is we work with our clients. We work with adults with different abilities, but we're also supporting the families as we move forward. And if you are coming onto this call and you're wanting to learn more about transition, at the end of it, I don't want you to feel bad for what you didn't know before this call, but instead to realize you don't know what you don't know, and that's okay. And there are going to be people along the way to be able to support you. And so to not be too hard on yourself and to know that you're doing the best that you can do, because I have to remind that pretty consistently.
I love that messaging, because I hear a lot of my clients will tell me they're feeling overwhelmed and they feel like they should have known more. And I could definitely pick up your educator background, your passion with education, because you were a teacher, right? Before you started Able Transition?
Yes, I was a special education teacher before I started Able Transition Consulting. And that's really where this work kind of was born, teaching in a public school system and then teaching at a local community college. In both sectors, families didn't know what was going to happen when the child was gone, right? When that teenager graduated, they're 21, 18, however old they might leave school at, the question of what happens next was one that I couldn't answer as someone with a bachelor's degree in special education. And so I went on a journey, if you will, and pursued my master's degree in transition. And my eyes were really opened to the complex and nuanced world of transition. And transition in and of itself is a newer concept, meaning within just the last decade, right? There's only a handful of universities in the country that even offer the master's degree program. And so when I moved from the school system to starting Able Transition Consulting, change really happened because I didn't know what to do to help my students and families in the school system for life after high school, for life after post-secondary education. And so I loved teaching. It was such a joy to me. I loved the families I worked with, the students I worked with. I had incredible staff that worked alongside of me. But when I was in that setting and realized, you know, there were limitations on how I could help, who I could help for long term. And so leaving was difficult, but I realized it was something that I could do to be able to support several families and several individuals, and not just in the short term, meaning in the school system, but that this could be something that could change the trajectory of their future.
Absolutely. I love that. And to me, what Able Transition Consulting is doing in your model, I like it so much because now I'm my cynicism is going to shine through here, but the person-centered plan is just like a lot of agencies just check the block. And I'm speaking as a dad. So, you know, if you've had better experience, you know, I'm not casting shade on agencies that are doing it right. But Kenzie, from what I understand with you, you do a person-centered plan as part of a bigger, extensive lifelong transition plan, right? I mean, it's so you're still knocking it out, but it's part of a bigger process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it depends on who you are and it depends on the agency you're with. It also depends on the agency, the individual's education, what they really know, if they're doing things that are research-based, if they're not. But you can hear person-centered plan. That can mean 100 different things, right? And I think the way that we define transition consulting is a person-centered plan is a plan where an individual with a different ability is able to, with as much autonomy and independence as possible, and using their self-determination skills, be able to communicate what they would like for their life in every area of adulthood. And I think that's what's important is, you know, a lot of times individuals in person-centered plans tell they want to have friends and, you know, absolutely that they want to work at this particular job. They want to start playing the guitar. Wonderful and great. But we ensure that with our person-centered plans, we have practical things in there as well. So we lead them towards understanding, all right, let's talk about transportation. Let's talk about living. Let's talk about healthcare. And the individual alongside of the family are able to give, you know, their dreams and their goals. And what's important too is that we use research-based methods when we're doing person-centered planning, and we ensure that our plans are strength and skill-based always and first and foremost, and that the adult is at the center of the plan. You can go to some person-centered planning meetings, and unfortunately, the parents are asked more questions than the adult, and we are dealing with their life, not the parent's life. And then we take that person-centered plan, the visual. So our clients come away with a visual plan that has goals for 20 years out into the future. And then we move from that person-centered visual plan to our extensive written lifelong transition plan. And in that plan, we essentially address every single area of adulthood. Like I said earlier, transportation, post-secondary education, healthcare, mental health, exercise. We talk about changing light bulbs. Like, you name it, if it's going to have to be done in life, we are going to address it. And we ensure that for every area, there is a timeline, there are goals, there's resources, there's information about like, who's going to do this? How are you going to do it? What's it going to look like? What support do you need? Because becoming an adult is complex for any person, right? You need support. We cannot be islands. We cannot be silos. We have to work together in an integrated manner. And so when we work with clients, we make sure that their plan is comprehensive, that it's lifelong, that we understand what natural supports they have in place, what community supports they have in place. And then a big part of our work too is resource sharing and what we call bridge building. So making sure that our clients have every type of resource that is available to them, whether that's helping connect them to their MCO or a specific agency they could work with, if that's an advocacy center, if that is a therapist, a counselor, a special needs financial planner, a great attorney who develops high quality special needs trusts, that's an introduction to ER, vocational rehabilitation, you name it, we're going to do it so that we can have more of a holistic plan for all of our clients. And along the way, we also make sure we care for parents and caregivers as well.
That's a lot. I just took 2 pages of notes, Kinsey. Let's unpack a little of it for the listeners that may not be familiar with some of the terms that you threw out. Autonomy. What does autonomy mean for an individual with disability?
Yeah, autonomy means that they are able to have a say in their life. If you think about an 18-year-old who is neurotypical heading out to college, if they are going to college, they have the autonomy, they have the ability to make choices for themselves. If that means they want to eat pizza for dinner and breakfast and lunch, they will have the autonomy, right? And the choices and the ability to eat pizza for breakfast, dinner, and lunch. That's maybe not the best decision, but they're at least executing autonomy. They're saying, this is what I would like. And so when I think about autonomy and self-determination are similar, but different in various ways. And so when I think about autonomy, I think about several sessions I've had where clients say things that parents have never heard before about what they would like for their life. And so that to me is huge. Even if it is an individual, right, pointing to symbols and pictures for what they're interested in. If it's someone expressing with an assistive technology device, if it's someone verbally expressing or using a switch, whatever they might need to do for them to be able to have the ability to see inside themselves what they would like and to express it and to not feel like they are simply living the life that their parents are setting out before them, but that they're able to have voice and choice in their future is huge. And so be different for every individual that we, which is a big part of why our plans are also just different, because they are going to be unique and comprehensive based upon the individual we're working with.
And I underlined twice, voice and choice. I love that phrase. And I wonder, do you have parents pushing back on you? Because the conversations I've had, parents are like, you know, my kid can't do anything without me. They'll need to be around me forever. And as a dad, seeing how far my son has gone over the last 9 years and being incredibly proud of me, he went so far as to tell me I need to move out, which I'm all for, but
yeah,
you know, so I wonder, do you find that some of your clients, the parents, you mentioned they were surprised, but do you see them giving you pushback?
Yes. I don't think that's singular, right? These parents love their child. And it comes out of fear, love and fear, very closely related. And so I think when you have love and you have fear involved and there have not been certain expectations put on an individual, if the parents haven't seen it, obviously they haven't seen it. But I think it's important to realize this over time with families, high expectations breed higher quality outcomes. And so having and giving high expectations to parents and to families is huge, because you will be surprised, I guarantee it, by what your child is able to do and what they are able to accomplish. And so it's definitely a process, and to trust in the process and to trust their child and to know that we want to have high expectations while also being realistic, right? And I think that's important. I think some families do come in with very, very high expectations, as they should. But I also want to be realistic. I want to reach for the skies, but also realize that not everyone's going to be an astronaut, right? There are a lot of people that work in NASA that are behind the scenes, but not everyone actually gets to go to the moon. And if they want to go to the moon, I want to help them figure out how they want to get there. For example, I have a client who is really interested in cars and racing, and he wanted to be a race car driver, but based upon his physical needs, medical needs and complications, that was just not plausible. It wasn't safe for his life. So we looked at how could he work in the racing world with cars? What really is the impetus of his, you know, enthusiasm for racing? Is it the crowds? Is it the sport? Is it the car itself? Is it the mechanics? And figuring out, you know, employment situations that could involve his desires and his dreams while also being realistic, if that makes sense.
Oh, I love it, Kinsey. And let's pull the string in that example for a minute to highlight the advantage of using Able Transition Consulting versus a state agency, right? You have the power of working with less clients, or if you work with more clients, hiring more staff to help out, and so you're not overwhelmed. A lot of state agencies, through no fault of their own, are understaffed, underpaid, and just they don't have the same resources that you do. You know, again, not casting shade, it's the world we live in, right? I mean, they're funded by Medicaid and state dollars, and they have a budget. What I'm hearing you say is, with using that example, you were able to go out and find people in the racing world, perhaps, who said, well, this is what somebody in the pit crew does. Or, hey, maybe you didn't know, but there's this other position within the racing circuit that nobody ever sees, because mm-hmm. it doesn't make it on TV. You know, that could be another way to get you in where you're safe, right? I mean, am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah. And I think what's important, and I think what, you know, you can go to an agency and get a support personnel. Absolutely. You need that in your life. But the plans that they are going to build are not going to be developed by transition specialists. They're not going to be developed by expertise that we have, and they're not going to be more comprehensive, right? You might have 8 goals working on specific targeted things, but they're not done in a necessarily research-based way. And we have a lot, I mean, most of our clients are working with a state agency. And what's important is, I think, you know, if they have support personnel, paraprofessionals coming into the home, the families can then look at the plan that we've provided them and ask for certain goals to be changed or goals to be added to their specific plan that they're working on. Or they can just ask, you know, in a casual way, if the paraprofessional can work on X, Y, or Z with their client. And we will add in our plans when we get that extensive lifelong transition plan, we present it to the family. It will say, work with your paraprofessional on these goals. And it will go through and break down. If you have someone in the home, this paraprofessional can support you with these things. But maybe this is something that you need to go see a speech therapist for. Maybe this is something you need to go to a psychiatrist for. Maybe this is something that Able Transition, our support personnel professionals, can work with you on. Yeah, I would say that it's a different game. We're not even playing the same game when it comes down to our planning. And I love a lot of agencies. I'm on the board of an agency and for where I live. And I believe in the work they're doing, especially the way they're providing support personnels and job coaches. But I think that our plan, by and large, just in a different ballpark.
Absolutely. And, you know, I equate it similar to when I'm telling families, work with Voc Rehab, but by the same token, don't rely on Voc Rehab to find your job. Use your networks, your other resources. But let Voc Rehab provide that job coach. Let Voc Rehab provide all the other things Voc Rehab is funded for and really good at.
Yes.
So all of these things that you're describing, I mean, this must take forever, right? I mean, it must take years and years to get the plan done, ready to go.
Actually, no, not years and years. It takes about 4 months, I would say. And that is if we're working with a kind of what we call like a straightforward case. Some clients will need more sessions and it will need to be longer. And that's something that we determine in what is called our strategy call session. So our strategy calls are free 45-minute calls where we figure out really who you are, what your needs are, what your concerns are, what's happening in your life, who is your child, what are some of their strengths and abilities. We have a lot of self-advocates even just schedule strategy calls with us and be like, mom and dad, we're going to go to this call. And then we can see if we are going to be able to support them and build them the plan that they need in the future. And so that's kind of at that strategy call is when we're able to determine a little bit more with more clarity how many sessions you'll need. But typically we start off all of our clients with an intake session. And once they have their intake session, that's when we can evaluate a little bit more thoroughly. Hey, we're going to need to meet every 6 months. We're going to need to meet over 7. But I would say by and large, it's typically four months from the beginning to the end of the process.
So as the parents out there that are listening, feeling already overwhelmed and like, oh gosh, what else? Kimsey's going to be adding more stuff to my plate. It's really not that bad. And at the end of it, you're going to have what sounds like to me, a very clear visual map and written map with timeline and waypoints to say, here you go. This is how you know you're on the right path, or here's where you should be by this time, or what have you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for so many parents, I just feel like I constantly have a nebulous of thoughts in my head and worries and concerns and ideas, and you've kind of erased all of that and it's all written. So when I go to bed at night, I don't have to sit up worrying about how is she going to get to work when I'm not here. We already have a plan in transportation. We have contingencies in place. And so I think that is a big part of what we do is helping families and individuals have a full plan where they have a path forward and there are less questions. And I'm very honest with parents. I am not going to give you a gold key to your child's future home. And I'm just transparent in that. That's not something that we do. I can't just give you the house they're going to live in forever, but we will work as hard as we can to make sure that we have a great plan moving forward in terms of we're going to give you options for potential group homes, nonprofits that have 3 to 4 person homes, what we call creative solution options, whether that's helping them find a roommate, talking to family members about, you know, extra dwelling places and on their land and property. So we make sure that there is plans and contingencies in place for after mom and dad are no longer here. I think that's something that we have to plan for and that we have to do. And it's not be working out of integrity if I did not take my clients to those places, simply because my hope is that the parents can have peace of mind for the future and that the adult will have a high quality life. And, you know, I have some clients who want to live independently forever. Some clients who are like, I really want a sister. And if sister really wants that too, and it's a great, you know, relationship and it will be a beneficial thing for both parties. And then if something happens to sister, I also have plan C, because I wanted to make sure that the parents, you know, parents and caregivers, whether you're raising your niece or your grandchild or your stepkids or your own kids, it is very anxiety inducing and overwhelming to think about the future. And when you do not have a plan, there is more stress and more question marks and more concerns. And so the big part of what we want to do is kind of take that away and also make sure that parents and caregivers are taking care of themselves throughout our process of working together, but then beyond that.
Yeah. And I want to circle back to where you said, if sister wants that too, because mm-hmm. I think oftentimes siblings may be forgotten about, maybe not maliciously so, but especially if you have somebody with high needs, right? Or parents mm-hmm. have just been involved heavily all along. I've worked with families where the assumption is, of course, sibling will step in when we're gone. And I really like how you highlight, well, what does the sibling think, want, feel? And give them a safe space to say yes or no. I mean, not feel like they're obligated. And I think that goes to those hard conversations you were saying and giving the family a safe place to talk while having very frank discussion that has to happen.
Yeah, I am the leader of many roundtable discussions that most people will not want to be involved in. But I think it's important, central for the work that we do. And a lot of times families need a third party to come in. And, you know, this is a part of our process. We're planning for the future. And so having the hard conversations are a lot of times just natural and organic and in a hard way. But I think it's important that every person can feel safe to voice what they would like for their future so that everything can align. So there's not resentment or bitterness on anyone's end or anyone's hearts. And I think, yeah, just bringing families together is important. And for some families we've worked with, you know, parents have realized, my child does need to live somewhere else. They need to live somewhere that is obviously safe, first and foremost, where their needs are met, where they are cared for and provided for, but that it might be better for my relationship. It might be better for my mental health. And that's a hard thing for parents to have to swallow. I think there's a lot of guilt behind that of, I should keep them forever. They should live with me forever. And in some cases, if that's what all parties want, and that's best for all parties, absolutely, that's fine. I think it's just so unique and different for every individual, but parents should never feel guilty for wanting their child to live independently or to be cared for by someone else, because sometimes that might be the best thing for everybody involved.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm glad you said that, Kenzie. So when should people start this? Is this something to wait till they're 18, 19? Is it something to start? I mean, when would, if you could wave a magic wand and say, everybody starts here, when would they start?
So I would say What we do is predominantly we work with individuals 18 plus doing lifelong planning. We also work with individuals ages 4 to 5, starting out until 15, 16, 17, doing what we call school-based transition planning. And so the earlier you start, the better. Research shows that when you begin to plan for adulthood and you begin to talk about transition earlier, the individual, an adult, has higher quality of life overall. Typically, they are much more likely to be employed, to have social, better, higher social skills, more friends, more community involvement. They have higher retention with their jobs. They're making more money financially. They're more financially secure. They have greater self-determination. It's just positive. So I would say the earlier you start, the better. If your child is under the age of 16, 17, then what that looks like is we do that school-based transition plan. And in that, we want to make sure that you have all the resources you need, that if there are waiting lists you need to be on, waiting lists, if there's an attorney you need to talk to, you're talking to that attorney. If you don't know about specific resources that are made available to you, we want to make sure that you can know about them. And then beyond that, we want to ensure that we can build a school-based transition plan where we're essentially thinking about where we want them to be at 21 and how they can get there. And so a lot of that is thinking about what are precursor skills. So what are pre-vocational skills? What are functional skills they need now? What self-determination skills, what advocacy skills, what do parents need to advocate for in the school system? How are they involved in the community? So it's pretty complex. And I would say the earlier, the better. And typically for some of our clients who are younger, you know, they've said, you know, when 21, we're going to come back and we're going to do the lifelong plan. And so that's what I would say. It's kind of twofold. If you have a child older than 18, 19, then absolutely start. If your child is 24, call me. At no point in time is it too late to plan for transition, even if they're already an adult. But at no point also is it too early. I think even in little ways, if you have a young child, asking them what their dreams are, asking them what they like, pointing out their strengths and their skills and their abilities to them is really crucial. And I talk to my clients a lot where it's easy for parents to discuss the negative and the hard and the weaknesses and the needs. But often I start all of our sessions with what are their strengths and skills and abilities in all of these various areas. And the more you can hone in on that, the younger they are, the more that your child is going to be able to advocate for themselves, to know what their abilities and what their strengths are. And it's likely that they will just have higher quality skills if they've been specifically talked about and addressed in your family unit as they've grown up.
That's not too different than us, right, Kinsey? I mean, our skills are everything that people focused on, rewarded us for, and highlighted when we were out there. And it makes sense. Although I do feel as parents of children with disabilities, we're almost conditioned to highlight the negative, because when you're applying for a waiver, you have to focus on all the negative and IEPs, which you know better than I do. IEP session seems to be the weaknesses and building for, there's just not a lot of strength. As a parent, I didn't see a lot of opportunity to highlight the strength because everything I needed seemed to be weakness-based. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yes, I know it all too well. And I think that it is very difficult to change systems, right? Systems that aren't built for everyone. And when I remember one IEP meeting I had with a student, it was a newer student that I had just gotten. I always focused on strengths and skills and abilities in my IEP sessions. And even in our present levels of academic and functional performance, when I didn't have to talk about weaknesses or needs, I would just call them growth areas and growth points. And I just remember a mom crying and being like, I feel like you're not making me feel bad or talking down about my child. And that's the first time this has ever happened in a session. And so at Able Transition, we call weak needs our construction zone, because everyone has a construction zone. We all have areas of growth in our life. And there are places where I'm growing still, right? Where I'm learning, and there are barriers that I have that I am working on. And so it's very important to ensure that the language we use is specific, so that families and the individual, whether they're a child, teenager, or adult, feel about themselves. And instead of seeing their needs or weaknesses as wrong or bad, to see them as areas of growth or as just differences, right? I don't think if if your child does not do well with eye contact, they don't have to look at their employer in the eye, right? We should let them be themselves in certain ways. And I think that when you have a society trying to fit everyone into the same box and the same mold, that's not a beautiful place. Everyone is different and unique. And so I think that our systems need to change in a big way, but that's a larger conversation.
No, it's awesome. I mean, I think that's a great place to end it on. I mean, you're absolutely right. And so I would like to ask you, is there one podcast or one resource that you, Kenzie Clark, have found to be just such an amazing resource for yourself personally and share that with the world?
That's a great question. I will say I do enjoy following several individuals on the Instagram from our business page. The Lucky Few is a really awesome group of moms that I follow, and I've actually been on their podcast and they've been on mine. And I just love the work they're doing. I love the way they care for families and really support families and individuals and just have hard conversations. It's honest. And I think that has been a place where a lot of the families I work with love to listen to them because it helps them to not feel alone. And I think that that's important, is to know that you're not alone. And there are people who are like you and like me who are wanting to walk this journey with you and cheer you on along the way.
Awesome. I love it. I'm going to add them to I'll add their podcast to the show notes. I think the more we can do where we make hard conversations okay, mm-hmm. and stop this, you know, cotton candy conversation, you know, that makes you feel that good, but doesn't really do anything. I think the better off we are as a culture and a community. But no, this has been phenomenal. I've got 4 or 5 pages of notes here that are going to go into show notes. Thank you very much, Kenzie.
Yes, of course, Eric. Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the ABCs of Disability Planning podcast. We invite your feedback and comments. Please feel free to leave a review wherever you are listening. And don't forget to hit like, follow, and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. If you would like to connect, please email me, eric@specialneedsnavigator.us. If you'd like to learn more about or talk with a guest, please reference the show notes to find the best way to reach them.